Welcome to Inside Pop. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel. This week, we discuss the new film, The Big Sick, which I think could be the sleeper hit of the summer.
The Big Sick, not to be confused with The Big Sell, which is taking us way back this week. Subtle hint.
Plus, we count down our favorite LGBT television characters with special guest Kevin Fairchild.
That is all ahead on Inside Pop.
Hey y'all, welcome to Inside Pop. We are still pumped about our recent announcement. In case you missed it, we are joining the Maximum Fun Podcast Network.
We are incredibly excited to be joining this amazing network, and we are putting together our debut episode, which will premiere on Wednesday, July 5th.
And don't worry, you can still find us everywhere you have before, but now you can also go to MaximumFun.org to find our podcast, along with a bunch of other amazing podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture.
So once again, Wednesday, July 5th, 1 week away or less, you will find us on MaximumFun.org. But now, let's get back to this week's show. And Amita, I'm really excited to hear you share your opinion on the new film, The Big Sick, starring Kumail Nanjiani. What did you think of the film that you saw this week?
I was so excited to see a Producers Guild screening of The Big Sick a few days ago. It was so, so funny. I was telling everybody who I'd seen after the film, you have to go see this movie. I have not laughed this hard out loud in the theater in a long time. And you all have to think about it. Think about the last time you really, really just laughed out loud. It almost hurts your belly. Like, just so many great moments and multiple times, you know. I like Kumail Nanjiani, but I wasn't as into him and his comedy as maybe, say, like somebody like Aziz Ansari, who I followed a little bit more. I did see, you know, some of his stuff on Silicon Valley, and I thought he was really funny. But this movie made me a huge, huge fan of his. He co-wrote it, and it's directed by Michael Showalter, executive produced by Judd Apatow. Like, there's some really great names involved
Bonafides.
Here, and I can see why.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can see why this came together and is getting a lot of buzz right now, because it's just really, it's a great story. It's based on a true story, which is really crazy, because it's a true story of Kumail's life, and it's unbelievable. Like, you can't believe that this could have happened to him. But at the same time, it's just hilariously funny.
So it's a movie about his girlfriend who falls into a coma. And you're calling it hilarious. So pray tell, is it a dark comedy? Is it a dark comedy? I mean,
no.
It's amazing to me that there are so many laughs in this, what feels kind of very tragic and intense. But so I'm kind of curious as to where they found the humor in the story.
I think it's an interesting combination, right? So Kumail is Pakistani and comes from a traditional Pakistani family, and he's a stand-up comedian. He plays himself in the film, right? So he's struggling as a stand-up comedian and meets this girl after, you know, a very short set at a comedy club, and they hit it off, and it's their kind of meet-cute story. And then it takes this left turn that she gets sick. Underlying all of it is how Kumail is traditionally Pakistani and his parents keep trying to set him up and arrange his marriage, which was something that was super interesting to me, but also extremely funny. Like, you know, think Bend It Like Beckham and even some of the themes in Master of None. It's super interesting to see a culture, like a South Asian culture, portrayed in a film and done well, and everybody can laugh at it, not just me.
All right, so I have a question for you, which is slightly intentionally naive, but there's actually some sincerity in my question, which is, you are Indian, Kumail is Pakistani,
yes.
So obviously different cultures, different countries from which you've originated. So how much did you, or are you able to connect to, say, this story versus a story about, the experience of a Chinese American immigrant or a Japanese American immigrant? How close, I guess I'm asking, is the Indian American immigrant experience to the Pakistani American experience?
I think both cultures are extremely different, but when it comes to the values of marriage, I think that they very much align. You know, I think that in both cultures, we are raised to be, I think it was a joke in the film, raised to be extremely successful, hardworking doctors, engineers, pharmacies, all that stuff. But then also find a good partner in life. And that is also like a second priority so that you could then eventually have children. And then the circle starts again and you teach your children to be doctors and this, that, and the other. And this is definitely portrayed in Kumail's family in this film as well.
Okay. And
that is something that I grew up with. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you arranged marriages, which is a plot line in this film. Is that something that you experienced firsthand, or did you have relatives who were part of arranged marriages? Were your parents part of arranged marriage?
Yeah, my parents were in arranged marriage. All of my mom's brothers and sisters, and my dad's brothers and sisters, almost all of them have been arranged marriages. There is a term called an arranged marriage and a love marriage in our culture for a reason. So they were all arranged. I still know people who are getting arranged marriages now.
People in their 30s, you're saying, who were part of arranged marriages?
20s.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
20s.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, especially still in India, it still happens. My niece, I went to my niece's wedding, and that was kind of an arranged marriage in a way. You know, I think that there are some lines that are blurred where they think that two people could be a good match and they will see if they hit it off and maybe give it a couple months. Whereas I think way back in the day with my parents and before them, you might meet somebody for a day or two and then you just, it's good.
It's all good.
There's different variations.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, Amita, I'm on to you, South Asians. Don't think you're slipping one past me. Mindy Kaling, Hasan Minhaj, Aziz Ansari. I know what you guys are up to. You are continuously delivering quality pop culture. I know what you guys are doing. Don't think you can slip one past me.
You know they're not slipping anything past me, and I love every minute of it. You know, we kind of got diverted into the arranged marriage thing. The movie is called The Big Sick, because there is a sickness that kind of takes over the middle section of this film. And it's done with heart and humor, and it's done really, really well. Ray Romano's in the film. He's amazing. Holly Hunter's awesome. Zoe Kazan plays the girlfriend. It's a really, really great cast, and it's a really great film. I think everybody would enjoy it.
Well, and you saw it at a Producers Guild screening. It's in limited release now, right? But it opens nationwide soon.
Yeah, I think they're doing like a slow rollout. They're just getting a few theaters every weekend, and they're expanding a few theaters and cities every weekend after that. But I think July 14th is the wide release date. So July 14th, mark your calendars. But if you're in a major city, check every weekend until then. You might be able to find it somewhere at a theater.
Well, I root for Kumail. I actually, side note, actually worked with Kumail for a hot second. He was a writer on Best Week Ever when I was the executive producer of the show. And he couldn't have been nicer, smarter, funnier. He was with our show for a hot minute. Then he actually left to work with Michael Showalter. So I'm glad that they kept their connection. And I bonded with Kumail because when I interviewed him, he had just adopted a kitten. And all I wanted to talk to him about was the kitten in the interview. And he was really funny about this kitten he adopted. So I hired him. And I'm so happy for all of his success. So The Big Sick, it's definitely going to be on my must-view list. Thank you for that early review, Amita. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So let's switch gears now. Pride Month is almost over, but for real, it's Pride Month every month here on Inside Pop.
But to celebrate this month, we are replaying our discussion of our favorite LGBT television characters with a special guest photographer and filmmaker and podcaster, Kevin Fairchild.
So great to have you with us, Kevin. When we had the idea to count down our favorite queer characters, we thought of you immediately. Have wanted to have you on this podcast for a long time, so psyched to have you with us. And since we are very gracious hosts, we would love for you to start us off. Can you tell us your third favorite LGBT character of all time?
Yeah, actually, my list is not necessarily in any preferential order, but I'm going to start off with Kalinda on The Good Wife.
Oh, okay.
And,
You know that I like that choice.
I know. I really love her as a character because, one, she was an out bisexual character on the show, having relationships with both men and women, but the other thing I really love about her is the way that she actually sort of queered her gender as well. She was this really powerful woman character who sort of took on these masculine attributes of using sex for information and power, but never really lost her femininity in that entire process as well. So I really just love the way that she was overall drawn as this great character.
And you kind of chose one of mine because I completely agree, and she's fantastic, and she's holding it down for the Indian ladies, so obviously I loved it, and it was really refreshing. I completely agree. It was a non-event, and she was bisexual, and let me tell you, some of those scenes were really, really hot, and I was like, all right, girl, get yours.
Were you ever given pause that she used sex as a weapon? Because, like, you know, like the whole stereotype of, oh, bisexuals, they'll sleep with anything that moves, and, you know, sex is their kind of power play. I mean, how did you react to that?
Yeah, that never really crossed my mind in terms of the, you know, the sort of stereotype that bisexuals will use sex and power, because I think that anyone is capable of using sex and power, mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. being a bisexual, I don't think gives you more of an ability to do that. And, but I also think it's the way that she did it. And, you know, for me, it was almost more that queering of the gender thing than it really was necessarily her bisexuality. She's also that really beautiful, flirtatious character that I think regardless of your gender or sexual orientation, you have the feeling that if you were to meet Kalinda in real life, somehow you would just be set at ease by her and attracted to her and feel that she's attracted to you in that same way that, you know, makes you so both comfortable and comfortable at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes. I couldn't have said it any better. That was exactly how I feel. She was just this amazing, beautiful, powerful woman, and that was just one aspect of her, and it was just, it was strong, it was sexy, it was just, that's Kalinda, and I think that's what I loved about it, you know? She just, she's a fantastic actress to be, like, to boot on top of everything else. Like, she really played that part so well. Good job, Archie Punjabi. We love you.
You know what I'm going to ask you guys afterwards? Like, maybe give me your favorite Kalinda episode. Maybe I'll watch that one kind of out of context of the entire series. Ooh. But I definitely want to see this character doing everything that you say she does.
I kind of want to give you one that involves Jason Street from Friday Night Lights, because then you'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
That was a good, like, section of time.
Okay. Okay. Well, Amita, why don't you go next?
So my choice for number three is a slight throwback to one of my favorite series, and I know, Sean, you love the series as well. It is the character Mark St. James from Ugly Betty.
Yes!
Yay!
Good choice!
He was just fabulously snarky and just exactly who would you think would be working at a fashion magazine in New York. And so he fit that character. But there was always these moments of sensitivity that I loved in his character that you didn't expect and were so beautiful. And there weren't many of them, but when they were there, I think that gave his character so much more depth and it, you know, showed another layer to him, which I loved.
That character is a great example of a character I absolutely loved and couldn't wait for every time he appeared on screen. But if I knew him in real life, would hate him so much.
Yes. Yeah. Michael Urie, you were made for that character.
Kevin, did you ever watch Ugly Betty?
You know, I did not. I knew that it was out there in the world, but I never really experienced the fabulousness that is Ugly Betty, and I feel like now I should go back and watch a few episodes.
Yeah, it's very. I mean, it is like it's one of the gayest shows that's ever been on TV. Even though there were only one or two gay characters, but yeah, Mark St. James was amazing, and he did kind of start out as this big stereotype, but it was like very self-aware. He was self-aware that he was a stereotype. The writers were, and they played with that. But over every season, you saw layers of him, and he just became this really likable, funny, witty character.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, I don't necessarily mind the quote unquote stereotype character as long as that stereotype is not treated as the joke. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as it's just part of who they are as a character, and it, which is why, I don't know, we can talk about this later if we want to, but I had issues with some other very popular shows and the way that they treated characters on those shows, because their sort of stereotypical thing actually became the butt of the humor, and that really bothered me.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And yes, let's talk about that later.
We should.
Yes.
So what is your number three choice, Sean?
Well, this will not be a surprise to any who have listened to this podcast. I am going to cheat a little bit and say that my first pick for favorite gay characters on TV are the queer Sense8s. Okay. So Sense8, as we all know, is a show by the Wachowskis, and it's basically about eight people who one day they're all kind of connected mentally and emotionally, and they start to hear each other's thoughts and they can communicate. One of the Sense8s is a transgendered woman living in America, in San Francisco, and one is a closeted telenovela star living in Mexico City. And it's maybe the most kind of positive, earnest, but kind of heartwarming and exciting gay depictions on TV today, in my opinion. Lito, who's the Mexican closeted gay guy, is just the best eye candy on Netflix. He's so hot, and he's always in his underwear. So I'm just going to take it to that superficial level for a moment, people. And Nomi's great. And I would say that it's maybe the most... We don't have many transgendered people on TV, but for me, the most complex transgendered person I've seen on television. And I think I've learned a little bit about transgendered people through that the depiction of that character. So it's just so positive and uplifting, and then I get that plus sci-fi and superpowers, and that's really all I need.
You and me both. I think that topless cute boys and superpowers have probably had me into shows for longer than I'd care to admit.
You had me at topless as well.
There was, when I was preparing for this podcast, I decided to rewatch a couple of scenes, and I was literally in tears. There's this amazing scene, and it doesn't come until the ninth episode, where these two queer Sense8s communicate with each other, and it's this amazingly touching scene where Leto's at wit's end. He's about to be outed. He feels like he's a weak failure of a man. And they come together in this beautiful museum, and Nomi tells Lito a story about how when she was a boy, she was basically hate-crimed, and just their acting and the way the screenplay is written and the way it's shot. I was in tears this morning watching that scene. It's so touching. And the characters feel so real in such a ridiculously over-the-top sci-fi show.
Yeah, that's a beautiful scene too, because the concept behind the show and the characters, that you really have empathy and you really have a greater understanding for someone else's lived experience, even though you haven't lived it yourself. And that's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if only there was a way to actually sensate with others, because it is just, and if only there was a way to have amazing hot tub sex with five really other attractive people, which is a great scene, Amita, from episode 6.
I'm sorry if you all could see me right now. I'm sorry. Which episode is that? Can I write down that number, please?
Isn't that just A Weekend in the Pines? I'm very confused.
Based on a true story.
Exactly.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Well, let's get into our next choices. Kevin, what was your number 2 pick?
So I think my number 2 pick is my greatest chance of overlapping with Sean, and that is going to be Omar from The Wire. I think that Omar is such a phenomenal character overall in terms of his moral code and the way that he is able to see the division between the people who are quote unquote in the business and out of the business and the way that they're treated. But man, what a surprising character. And that moment when he first kisses his boyfriend, that you're just like, what, where did this come from? it was very surprising. And, you know, I've heard a couple of really great interviews with Michael K. Williams, who played Omar, just talking about that part of him. And it's, you know, he's a great character, and I think that I'd love to see more of those characters like that on TV.
That could have been an overlap, but I've only seen the first 3 seasons of The Wire, so I didn't feel that I could put him on there. But I agree with you. It's just amazing to see that level of complexity in a character we've never seen before on television.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this or not, but Omar is actually based on a real person. Who was not gay in real life. And so that was actually the choice that they had made, to make Omar gay, even though the character he's based on is not.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Great choice.
Thank you.
Okay, Amita, what's your next choice?
If you all listen to this podcast, you know I love this series on Netflix. And I'm going to choose Titus Andromeda from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Pinot Noir.
And that's the only reason I chose him, so you could sing that again. So, I mean, there's so much we could say about Titus. He just is, you know, just fantastic on the show. He's so fantastic. He truly does steal every scene when he's in it. And I think I quoted him to somebody, and I think I did to you too, Sean, like just in a recent episode that I had watched, his new love interest was saying something and was going kind of a little bit off the rails about something. And he's like, hold on, why don't you make like a 30-year-old and settle? And it was just the best line ever. And I was just like, I love this guy. I love his character, you know. And to that point, like, I love they're kind of giving him a little more depth this season, and, you know, trying to get him in a little uncomfortable place with, you know, having a relationship and things like that. And I haven't finished the season yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes with him. But come on, Pinot Noir, the he needs his kimono. Like, it's just amazing. The scene where he had to give away so many of his clothes to Goodwill and all of the things that were in that bag of clothes. It was just amazing.
Yeah, he's a pretty fabulous character. I mean,
he is.
I would imagine they had to give him more screen time just because I'm pretty sure that people wanted more of him.
For sure. And I am not ashamed to admit, I did buy Pinot Noir by Titus Burgess. And I may have given it to a gift for a birthday of somebody who is on this podcast right now.
You know, right now I'm letting it age, Amita, because I bet, like the show, like the series that spawned the wine, it improves with time. But I want to have a Pinot Noir tasting with you. And Kevin, you're invited as well. We'll pop the bottle and drink Titus Burgess's Pinot Noir.
Love it.
Yes. Ode to Black Venus.
I couldn't say it, so thank you.
Oh my God. That sounds amazing. Okay. I'll wear the kimono.
Okay, great.
Okay, so Sean, what is your second choice?
My second choice is a wonderful woman named Willow Rosenberg from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I knew somebody from Buffy would be on this list.
So
awesome.
She is amazing. From season one, Willow was my favorite character. But essentially, seasons one, two, and three, Willow was kind of a Buffy's best friend, smart, witty, self-deprecating, quirky, but definitely lacking confidence. She was also straight. She dated Oz, the werewolf. They go to college in season four, and as happens sometimes in real life, she meets a woman, Tara. They fall in love, and as Willow realizes that she's a lesbian and loves women, and her sexual awareness increases, so do her Wiccan powers. So it's this great, you know, metaphor for kind of sexual awakening, and just awakening in your own confidence in your own self. And she becomes a fierce witch, and she's amazing. She's just so funny, so loving. The relationship between Willow and Tara was beautiful. I think just the way Joss Whedon wrote that character, funny, touching, exciting, surprising. Willow is one of my faves.
That's a great choice, actually. For whatever reason, Willow did not even cross my mind, but I love her. That's a really great choice.
We are at our top choices. I can't wait.
So, my top choice is sort of a counterpoint in a way to Omar. This is another character that is a very strong character, has a complicated and complex moral center, but where Omar is sort of the very masculine sort of thing, where he was mixing in his more sensitive side in the way he deals with his moral code. Lafayette on True Blood is someone who is more of the kind of feminine sort of exterior with that very strong, powerful interior. And, you know, I mean, Nelson Ellis really brought it with that character. I'd heard that he auditioned several times and was always turned away. He went to his acting coach to find out what he was doing wrong. And she said, you're playing him too gay. You're playing him too swishy. And that's not what they're looking for. So he finally went back and he channeled his mother and channeled himself. And out of that was born Lafayette. And as I understand, he ad-libbed a lot of it. So a lot of that was just coming straight out of his mind. He had strong input on costuming and what he wore in the first couple of seasons. So here again, you have this guy who's really contributing to this amazing character.
Oh, Lala. I love him. What a great character. Okay. And you know what? I love the fact that, and I'll admit this, sometimes I did get a little uncomfortable. He really pushed some stereotypes, which, sitting on my couch watching HBO, I was like, do we really want other people to see this? But I think that's good. I think it's good to kind of challenge those notions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, made me confront some stuff.
Embrace your inner Lafayette. It'll be fine.
I know. I need to.
I love how each of these things, it's like the connection between some of us. And I'm usually the odd man out because I have not seen True Blood. But me and Kevin have actually met Nelson Ellis, and he's a wonderful actor. And I'm curious to see, and I think like Sean said, I'd love to see a good episode of him.
There's this great scene that actually started making its way around the my Facebook universe a few months ago, and there's this group of guys in the restaurant who order a hamburger, and when they see Lafayette in the kitchen, they send it back saying, "We ordered a burger without AIDS." And Lafayette, I mean, takes off his earrings and goes out and basically just reads these guys at the table. And it's so amazing, just that one scene. Because, again, you have this sort of femininity about him that he brings out, and then he comes out and just delivers this incredibly powerful moment on the show. That really, I mean, in that moment, you can totally fall in love with Lafayette.
Oh, I love that scene. I know exactly the scene. And it's such a vicarious thrill because as a viewer, you think, I would want to have the courage and the wit and the sass to be just like Lafayette in that moment.
In almost every moment he's on the television show, I wish I had that much wit and sass.
That's true.
Okay, is it my turn?
It is your turn, Amita. Your final choice.
It was pretty easy for me to figure out my number one, though, just because, as we've already discussed on this podcast, I love the series Grey's Anatomy. And so Dr. Callie Torres is my number one choice. And it's also a little bit of an homage to her because she decided to leave the series after 10 seasons. So Callie Torres, you're just fantastic. Like, she was fearless. She was, you know, struggled with you know, coming out and then had an issue with her dad about it and, you know, was bisexual at the beginning and then realized, nah, I'm just going to go with ladies. And her relationship with Arizona was such a huge part of the show and such an emotional roller coaster for majority of the seasons.
And ups and downs.
And it was really raw, but really, really sweet. And there was so much love and so much pain. And, you know, I'm not going to give away what happens at the end of this season, but, you know, it's, I think she did a great job as a character. And I just love Sara Ramirez so much. She's such a stunning, beautiful, talented actress. And she could sing. And so yeah, I think Callie Torres was a really, really great.
Ooh, love that choice, Amita. Character. Love that choice. And it's like a slight tangent, but I love how, you know, Sara Ramirez is this full-figured woman. And there's never not double negative a moment when she's, you know, not sexy. And just like, like in love, like loving her body and like being in her body and like everything about that character is so empowering and positive. And, you know, she's not perfect. Yeah. She makes mistakes. Mm-hmm. I rooted for Callie and Arizona so hard. They broke my heart. They broke my heart.
Same here. Calzona.
Calzona.
I rooted for them as well. And, you know, for those of you watching this last season, it's a hard one to watch. So definitely if you've like left Grey's and want to come back and see some really good Calzona scenes, you would see them in this 12th season of Grey's. Ooh, okay. And thank you, Dr. Callie Torres, being my number one choice.
Love it.
You know, we've talked on this podcast quite a bit about how amazing it is to be able to see someone who reminds you of yourself, who looks like you, who's recognizable as some aspect of you on television. So, again, I'm cheating a little bit because I'm choosing a couple created by Alan Ball from the show 6 Feet Under. I'm choosing David Fisher and Keith Charles as my all-time favorite LGBTQ, but they're gay, couple on television. You couldn't have given me more of myself in 2001 when that show premiered. I think I was the exact same age as David and Keith, right? They were in their early 30s when the show premiered, as was I. They were part of an interracial couple, as was I. They were just dealing with so many of the things that I had dealt with and that I was dealing with. So nuanced. I would say that the growth that each of them makes over the 5 seasons is remarkable. You know, David was this closeted, unhappy man, kind of torn apart by grief and being in the closet. Keith had some serious anger issues. But over the course of 5 seasons, because of their love for each other, they grew and ended up being amazing fathers to initially very difficult children to love. They were I think they were a big touchstone. When Nate and Brenda were like complete dysfunction and you were actually like, you know what, they're better off apart. And, you know, I think Keith and David to me were the touchstone couple and I just loved them so much and rooted for them so hard to stay together and to work it all out. And that couple is just like a gift of TV character to me.
No, absolutely. And I, you know, watching, I've actually been through the first 2 seasons of 6 Feet Under. It's a show that I've always felt like I need to go back to and finish. But, you know, again, that's another really just beautiful, surprising, and amazing journey to watch these characters go through. as they learn about themselves and the world that's around them. So good choice.
Thanks.
Great
Thanks.
Choice, John.
Thank you.
So I would love to pose to both of you, what type of LGBT characters would you like to see in the future? That we haven't seen already, or, you know, pieces of, you know, you may have had in the past that you'd like to see in the future.
I think for me, you know, a lot of what we talked about here is sort of HBO or Netflix or non-broadcast kind of characters. And so I think what I would really love to see is more queer characters, particularly queer characters of color, on broadcast television.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also love to see characters that are living out as opposed to watching them come out. Because I think that, you know, we understand the coming out story now. And I think in characters, I'm more interested in what their lives are like after the closet.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I think that's really what I would love to see.
I love that. I think that's a really good point about, especially about broadcast versus prestige television.
Definitely.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think I would also just love to see, you know, even more diversity. It's partly because I love the genre, but I would love to see a great action-oriented program where there is a detective who solves murders who happens to be gay, right? Like, I'd love to see gay characters in all the different genres we have on television.
You know, and I think that, you know, Cyrus Bean was a character that was sort of on my secondary list. And, you know, one of the things I love about him is that he's older, you know?
Yes,
I mean,
definitely.
He's not the young, shirtless, cute guy on television.
Yeah.
And I love that about Cyrus.
Yeah, and you get to see him have sex.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Like, unlike those shirtless ones on How to Get Away with Murder with Connor and Oliver.
Exactly.
I'll take it, but yeah.
I mean,
same here.
I'll take it, but one cannot subsist on a diet of just hot, topless guys, you know.
That's true.
For sure.
In their youth.
Definitely.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, here on the flip side to Amita's question, what don't we want to see anymore on television in terms of lesbian and gay characters?
Yeah, Kevin, you were kind of alluding to some certain things that you, some characters you may not have appreciated.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, Will and Grace and Jack was a really complicated situation because, you know, I love the character of Jack. I love Sean P. Hayes. And I really think that he was an important character, but all too often his sort of swishiness and his, you know, over the top gayness of the character was the humor in it. And, you know, there's of course that really famous episode where Will is actually confronted with it because he won't introduce Jack at the gym. And he sort of disassociates himself from Jack because he's this, you know, kind of really stereotypically overly gay character. And Will actually had to confront his own kind of internalized homophobia in that way. But I felt like the whole series just kind of did that with Jack. So, but that's not to say that I don't want to see characters like Jack, because I loved Emmett on Queer as Folk. You know, Emmett owned his own femininity, owned who he was as a person. And I thought that was amazing as a character, and they worked with that. So
yeah, there were I think layers might be it. I think Jack started to feel really one note.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
that's
a
what
sitcom,
I was too.
But still, I think
right.
You know, and I mean, I sometimes, and I know everyone loves Mitch and Cam, but there are times where I watch Jack or I watch Mitch and Cam in Modern Family, very different, but I do think it's so easy for America to like them because in a way they feed every safe stereotype, and they're not challenging in any way. So of course, you know, 10 million people a week watch them and are like, oh yeah, I'm comfortable with gay people.
They're safe. They're very safe.
Right.
They're very safe. Yes.
But you know, that can be said, the same thing can be said about most straight characters on broadcast television.
True.
I mean, even though they may have some edginess to them, they are for the most part safe.
Right.
Exactly. That's a good point.
I think, you know, one of my honorable mentions that I sort of alluded to earlier, which is a character who actually is not specifically gay, but I think is still this wonderfully queer character in a way, is Niles Crane on Frasier.
I thought of him too.
I thought about Niles Crane.
I mean, I'm a huge Frasier fan. I have seen the entire series multiple times. I have entire episodes memorized. And I don't know if it was just David Hyde Pierce's own sexuality that came through in Niles, but I just loved Niles. And even though he dated women, he was married to Maris, you know, there was always this wonderful thing about him that was this sort of fastidious queer character, even though he was totally straight.
Right. But I mean, then there was that whole, like, we never saw Maris.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think there was a little wink there with
that.
Right. Well, and there were a number of episodes where there was some confusion. I think actually all three of the men had gone on gay dates without knowing they were on a gay date over the series of the show. And then 3/4 of the way through the episode, the other two figure out what's going on. And again, that was never played for the humor in the negative way. It was just, you know, recontextualizing that conversation. So, I love
that. That's a good one. Yeah, it crossed my mind too. And I was like, oh no, but he was married. But
right.
I was like, but I really did feel like he was gay on that show.
Oh, good honorable. Okay, so my honorable mention, shout out to Uncle Arthur from Bewitched.
Yay.
Of course.
Yes.
Who again wasn't, in 19, you know, in that era, he was not actually gay, but, you know, even the fact that he was the Uncle Arthur, I'm sure there's a gay bar somewhere named Uncle Arthur's, but I think that
if not, there should be.
There should be. I'm going to open it.
You know, we can go back all the way to Soap with Jody, played by Billy Crystal, who was probably one of the first openly gay characters on television. You know, to be given some prominence. Someone just forwarded me the other day, actually, a really great episode from All in the Family where they had a drag performer on and he was basically treated as part of the family. But at the end of the episode, he's actually beaten and dies. And so it basically causes this whole moral question of, you know, in terms of religion, where is God? Why is he allowed this to happen, kind of thing. So you know, I think that some shows have really been able to deal with this in ways that are pretty outstanding. And I think I'd like to see more of that on television now, too.
That's great. Norman Lear was doing it before anybody
groundbreaking
else.
Groundbreaking stuff. So long ago. Yeah. If we're all giving honorable mentions then. Kurt Hummel on Glee. I did watch that for a number of seasons. And aside from him kind of dealing with his own sexuality and then, you know, his feelings, you know, for Blaine, what I loved about his role and his character on that show was his relationship with his father and the struggle his father had. And that story arc of his father not being 100% okay and then coming kind of full force, full circle. And there's this one scene that I'll never forget. And I don't remember what they sang, but it was beautiful. It made me cry. It was such an amazing kind of moment between a father and son, kind of not understanding, but getting to a place of understanding. And I really did enjoy that.
Yeah, I'm glad teenagers had that character to see.
Yeah.
And this counts because it was made for television, even though it is now seen as a film. But there's this great film called Norman, Is That You? I don't know if you guys have seen it or not.
I haven't.
But
no.
It's Red Fox, and he leaves his wife in New York, and he decides he's going to come out and stay with his son in West Hollywood. And he has no idea that, one, his son is gay, and two, he's dating a white man. And it's watching Red Fox's own journey on that is pretty amazing. He slowly tries to accept his son's sexuality, goes to a bookstore and buys a stack of like 20 books that there's this great shot of him sitting in a park bench reading through them, just trying to understand it. and by the end, you know, being able to come to some understanding. That was mid-70s as well.
Oh my gosh, I have to see this. This has been the most fun conversation, and my to-view list has just increased by 170%.
Tripled, yes. Quadrupled here. My goodness.
Norman, Is That You, I think, just recently became available on iTunes.
Great. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an amazing, fun, illuminating conversation. Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month, and thank you guys very much for having me on.
Thanks again to Kevin for joining us for that discussion. You can find Kevin on Twitter at Kevin Fairchild, KevinFairchild. And you can also check him out on the Produced By podcast, which is the official podcast of the Producers Guild. He is an incredible host and interviewer, and there's some really awesome interviews on there with some awesome producers.
You know, Amita, a year later, I am still feeling the same way about all of my picks. I'm consistent with my love for those queer characters.
Me too. It was fun to listen to that again.
Okay, well, now we come to the end of our show and our favorite segment, The Big Sell. Of course, The Big Sell is the segment in which Amita and I take turns sharing something we love from the world of pop culture with the other. The next week, we return to find out what the Big Sellee thought of The Big Sell. So last week, Amita big sold me on a new TLC single called Way Back. I was suspicious. I was sketchy. I wore many garments of...
The vest of caution was
revealed. The vest of caution. That's the last thing I was wearing. You know what? Because I just thought, oh, it's an old group, and is it part of that bad reality show they had years ago? Blah, blah, blah. I take all of that back. If you haven't listened, if you haven't heard this song Way Back, please just do yourself a favor and listen to it. I could say and be negative and say, don't listen to the new Katy Perry. You don't need that in your life. What you need to do if you want to hear a good, catchy song by a female artist is to listen to Way Back, because it's catchy, it's clever, it has a great hook, it has a rap by Snoop. What more do you need?
Yes.
So I loved it. Thank you for big selling it to me. It had that great TLC feel, and I'll say, that's all it needed. You know, it feels like it could have come out in the 90s or early aughts. And I think that's all we need for them, a really quality single that feels familiar and catchy. And that's what they gave us. And I liked it.
That's exactly why I had to big sell it to you. It was just one of those things that felt like a throwback. I think I said it last week, too. I was like, it could have been on one of their albums back in the day, because it has that great feel to it. And that is why we love them. So I was so happy to big sell it to you, because I was like, I think you're going to feel the same way.
I listened to it on a subway ride, and I lost control of my body and started doing the WAP while listening to that song. If you're listening to this podcast and you don't know what the WAP is, I guess go on YouTube and write in WAP, and maybe you'll see some WAP dance moves. But listening to Way Back gave me the involuntary impulse to do the WAP, and I did it, and I wasn't ashamed.
That's amazing. I love it when you WAP.
That's like the best dance of my life, the WAP.
That just makes me so happy. I don't even need to hear your review. Just making sure that you got to WAP on the subway is review enough for me. But please give your rating.
3.5 WAPs.
Yes.
And sadly, really, listeners really aren't going to get to see it, but I'm going to give Amita those 3.5 WAPs right now.
Yes. I'll WAP it out. Okay, sorry.
If we ever do a live show, I may WAP on stage.
You better WAP.
I will do the WAP for the listeners and the audience.
Well, you should do a WAP tutorial.
WAPing 101.
How many more ways can we say WAP? All right. Well, what do you have to sell to me this week? Will it make me WAP?
In a way. Okay, I would love to big sell you, and this is an honor of an experience we shared together recently. There is a program on Viceland called Earthworks. And Earthworks is a show where they follow a musician who journeys to an interesting place in the world. And cameras follow that musician, and you see the musician get in touch with their roots, and you see the musician play some music, and it's a real deep dive into their personalities, their backgrounds, etc. So I would like to big sell you, Amita Patel, the second installment of Earthworks, which features Miguel.
I don't know if you guys ever noticed that Sean and I always mention sometimes here and there that we share a brain. Next on my big sell list was to sell you this. I had not watched it yet, and I was like, I'm going to watch it, and then I'm going to sell it to him because I know we're both going to love this. And I didn't get a chance to do it.
Yeah, it's
so
kind
I'm
of.
I'm so glad that you sold it to me.
Yeah, it's kind of everything we love. It involves travel, it involves the exploration of culture, and it involves Miguel's cheekbones, which are on point in this documentary. So,
yes,
as you. Okay,
are.
Before we get into completely objectifying Miguel, which, guess what, that's going to happen.
Why are you making me wait to do that?
Miguel, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people just think of him as a black R&B performer. But if you listen to his music, if you read any of his interviews, he's actually half Mexican and half black. And especially on his last album, he sang about that, especially in that great song, What's Normal Anyway. He sings about kind of being Mexican and loving that heritage, but then also being black and being connected to that heritage. So this documentary, which is on Viceland, is about Miguel's journey, and he journeys with his father and his brother to the area from Mexico where his dad is from, and he's never been to that area before. So it's a really nice journey that you take along with him. You hear him play music with his dad and brother, which feels really special. And if you are a Miguel fan, you hear some of his hit songs played acoustically. So I just enjoyed it, and I'm pretty sure you will as well.
I love it. It's so funny. Thank you. I'm just going to say thank you.
You're welcome. And
if you didn't do it, I would have done it. So I'm so glad that we're on the same
brain. And I should tell listeners, if you want to play along and also accept this big sell, please do. You can watch it probably on demand on Viceland, but it's also on Live Nation's YouTube channel. So you can go there and watch it as well. And I think it's just 30 minutes. So if you like travel, great. If you like culture, if you like drugs, if you like Miguel, you will like this. Big sell of mine.
Well, that's our show for now. Please be sure to stay in touch with us via Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders.
And make sure to visit our official homepage. There you can check out older episodes, bonus content, and you can also subscribe.
And always, if you're going to subscribe on iTunes, please take a second, you know, half a minute or so, and give us a nice little rating, and maybe if you have time, write us a little review. It always helps us get to more people to find us on iTunes, which is always helpful.
Next week, ladies, gentlemen, and children, we are debuting on Maximum Fun Network. We are so excited, so please open up that podcast feed next week and hear our debut Maximum Fun Network episode. It's going to be awesome. We have a lot of special things planned.
Yes, you definitely don't want to miss it. So have a great week. Count the days until July 5th. And hope you all have an amazing 4th of July weekend.
Peace.